We return with Jasmine, who is the co-founder of the Academy of Animated Art, to hear more about her inspiration and motivation for starting the Academy of Animated Art and where it's all going. Lots of things you had said there, lots of great advice. I imagine, again, this entrepreneurial spirit, this innovative mindset can be the characteristic of someone who's quite driven and maybe is more leaning towards doing everything by themselves. Your point around not doing it alone is interesting, and it's seeing another side of what it can take to bring something like this to life. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to be the universal all-in-one and go it alone. And of course, all the struggles that come along, you bear yourself. So good to hear that that is a method of doing things that can lead to success. And then you said learning from others just saves time, and in initiatives I can imagine, such as the Academy of Animated Art, a lot of the things that you need to do have to be efficient because you're working during the day and you want to make the most of the time that you're putting into this project, and you don't want to absorb or use up all your energy, let alone all of the motivation to progress forward by doing things and then learning from failures that are available if you are able to ask the right kinds of people. And then the awkwardness around putting yourself out there. Personally, I feel like that is one of the hardest challenges to overcome because it puts you in a very vulnerable state. That vulnerable state leads to that sense of cringe feeling of if something doesn't work or you say something, and you have all these different ideas in your head of those people think this about me because I said that. And in personal experience, the whole world is ending now because of that scenario. So you were saying getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things when you start doing something on your own, but in life in general, is to embrace those awkward moments. There's going to be awkward moments. I mean, one could argue if you don't have those awkward moments or moments where, you know, you feel like you fell on your face, kind of, you're not pushing yourself hard enough, right? You're not going outside your comfort zone. And that's how we grow. And it's kind of this never ending growth, but that's how you push yourself. That's how you grow. And also, I mean, this, I think I said before, like, don't take it so seriously, but it's also don't take yourself so seriously, in that we're all human and we're all growing, we're all learning, and it's okay not to be perfect. I think a lot of the personalities that, you know, want to start up their own business or their own programs, they're very ambitious people, and they're also not used to failing, right? They don't like to fail. I mean, no one likes to fail, but you know, you just want to run away from that. But if you look at most of the most influential founders, entrepreneurs, look at their background. There's a lot of failure back there, right? And I mean, there's so many stats, like how many times you need to fail in order to succeed. And I'm not saying you have to fail, but it's okay. That's where I say, like, embrace those awkward moments. It's going to be, you know, things that don't go exactly as planned, I guarantee it. But what do you do at that point? One of my favorite quotes is, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% of how you react. And I think that holds true for anything, but especially if you're starting your own thing, especially if you walk up to someone and, you know, you try to strike up a conversation, you might fall flat on your face, you know, it's okay. You learn from that and you do it. You have to pick yourself up and do it again, because I think that's a big part of, you know, starting your own thing and putting yourself out there, right? I was so shy that all of kindergarten, I did not talk out loud. That's how shy I was. And now speaking with you today, going on panels, I would never have been there unless I really put myself out there and felt really uncomfortable for a very long time. And I still put myself in very uncomfortable positions. I think that's what you want to think about. And I kind of laugh at these awkward moments, especially when you're speaking, you know, in a big meeting or something, and there's like dead silence, especially in Zoom land these days when you have these virtual meetings. And there's a lot of awkward silences out there. And I used to joke at my old, when I used to work at Blue Sky, we'd be doing these lighting meetings with like 60 lighters, and I'd be talking, and then there's just that awkward dead silence after you say something, and then I just laugh. I'm like, yes, I love this. I kind of miss the awkward silence. It's really funny. But yeah, I think just embrace it. Don't be afraid to not be perfect and grow and keep on making yourself uncomfortable.
Wow. It's quite a few powerful things there that you are stating. And as you say, it's a learning curve. It's embracing this is an exercise in doing things over and over. I suppose you don't just go from feeling a certain way, then all of a sudden feeling completely opposite to that. So being kind to yourself along this journey. And as we move towards maybe the sense of these, maybe they're more internal blocks that stop people from possibly being able to do something like you're doing with setting up the Academy of Animated Art, and just to give them a sense of just things that you've had to overcome, because as you say, it's unlikely that every journey is smooth and in the right direction, and you know exactly where all the potholes are. You are taking a risk in some aspects, you are going with an adventurous cap on. Are you able to share some of the learnings, some of the opportunities you've had to rise up again so that people can get a sense of what it's like?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the biggest learning, especially when wanting to start up your own, whatever it is to want to go head first and sprint, right? And I did this, and I still have to remind myself to pause and first answer the really important question, who is this for? What do they actually want? Like, it's the whole marketing 101, right? It's kind of like, what's the problem you're trying to solve? That's a big one, right? Like, what's the impact of what you're trying to do? And it's very easy to kind of be tunnel vision, like, oh, I have this amazing idea. I know it. I'm going to just do it. And then what happens, the worst case scenario, you spend all your time in isolation, tunnel vision. I'm going to create this amazing product. And all of a sudden you go to launch it, crickets. And then you have to backtrack. And then you realize, like, well, wait, no one, who is my market? They don't get it and all this stuff. So like the biggest thing I'll say for someone that has an idea is to first vet it. Ask yourself the questions, who is this for? Do they want it? And they're hard questions because it's like you kind of want to prove that they want it, but then you also have to like be realistic, right? I mean, for lack of a better word, you have a finite amount of time. So be sure that you're focusing it on the right thing. And the way to do that, it could be fairly easy. It doesn't have to be intimidating. It could be just starting to have conversations with whoever you think your market is, right? Start talking to people about it, getting their feedback, also looking at other things around that might be related, seeing maybe what their market is. Because I will say one thing that I do find with the Academy of Animated Art is, and now in hindsight, not that I would not have started, but 3D and lighting specifically, super niche, right? I mean, talk like 3D in general is niche, and then you bring it down to like lighting in general. I mean, I've had discussions with, you know, my marketing people who are not in 3D, and they're like, there's like not that many lighters out there in the world, yeah. kind of thing. I was like, yeah. Yes, it's a very niche, like talk about niche, and it's good to be niche. But things like that, like start thinking of like who your market is, and it's to pause before you go and run, do the research, make sure you're focused. And by doing that, you'll actually hone in on, you'll make adjustments to what you think. You'll probably get better ideas because you'll talk to people and be like, I'm going to add that feature or this feature, right? So I think like overall, just an overarching thing, we all think we have the best idea, but it's good to vet it out, right? See if you really have this idea, and be okay to get criticism. I mean, I think as creatives and artists, it's like one of the things, you know, I remember first going into my lighting rounds when I was very new, and just, you know, you're putting up this personal to you, but you know, you get all this critiques and feedback, and you just have to learn the same way that an artist learns that it's not personal attack to you. It's like, no, I'm working to make my visual look, make this film look better, or whatever you're working on. The same way with an idea that you might have, right? You want to not keep it to yourself. You want to share, like, and I don't mean like blast it on social. You don't have to do that, but talk to other people about it. You don't have to tell them your specific ideas, because I know some people like, oh, if they hear it, they might steal it.
Yeah.
And that is like a very common thread. Mm. But this is the thing that someone told me, because I had that too. I'm very like possessed. I'm like, I can't tell anyone because they're going to take my idea, right? And the funny thing, someone who I was talking to about this, they're like, do you know how many people have ideas out there? The biggest, okay, this is actually a good tidbit. The biggest thing is not your idea, it's your action. Do you take action on it? Because everyone has an idea, but a very few minority actually take action on it, right? Actually can take that idea and make it into reality. And that's actually like the biggest superpower that entrepreneurs have. Because most of the times you speak to, you know, they have teams of people working for them, innovating for them. But they have this superpower of turning it into action, right? So that's where someone was like, you can tell someone the best idea, but most likely they're never gonna do anything about it, right? It takes a very specific type of person and personality and drive to take an idea and see it through. So if you're that person that you know you can take an idea and put action behind it, then you don't have to worry about someone else stealing your idea.
Yeah. And I've also had an experience of someone saying that it's not only just people taking your things that you shouldn't be worried about. It's also the flavor that you could attach to an idea could be completely different to the way in which they would take that idea. Because when you think of the landscape of just business, I suppose we're stepping a little bit aside from thinking about our industry, but when you think of the world as it is, how many common competitors are there? The competitors are people doing similar things in the space that you're in, trying to capture the market that you're in at the moment. And there are examples of people, when you boil down what their business is, it's exactly the same, but when you look at their take on it, it has a completely different style, experience, aesthetic, target audience. It's interesting to see some of these things where you say, oh yeah, they're doing exactly the same thing and they're looking to get money from this pot that exists within this particular economy. But when you think about them, you have totally different sensations that go through you, but it's exactly the same. So another way to look at it is like that. You have such a unique experience that what you could bring to it is possibly and very likely going to be completely different to what anyone else could bring to it. And the passion that you have, especially if you spawned it, is likely to bring the motivation in a way that probably feels more true to the idea than maybe something else that could spin it off in a different way. And that's a really good tidbit. Yeah, that's definitely a good tidbit, because it's a very common feeling. Once you can leap over those barriers of like putting yourself out there, being raw, it's also like, who else is going to do this before me? That feeling of like, no, I've got to be the first. I can't let anyone else. This is my little, you know, thing that I'm going to grow, and I want to be the one associated with this. And that can also, yeah, stop you from seeking out information in order to help guide you where you're going. And then, like you say, you run towards an end that maybe no one else is at that finish line waiting to cheer you on.
No, I completely agree, because I mean, this is a discussion that everyone has, but it's true. You, even if you're not, you know, the brand ambassador, let's say, but you are the person behind whatever you're doing. And that makes it unique in itself, right? You have a unique perspective, and other people are going to relate to your, whatever you're creating. Even if it's the same exact thing, it is going to have a different flavor. Even if it doesn't seem like it, even if people don't realize it, it does. Right. So that is true. And I couldn't agree more. And the other thing I was just thinking, as you were saying this, to really keep in mind, and this is holds true not only for if you are planning on creating your own, you know, business initiative, whatnot, is to, and I say this to my clients that I coach, is keep in check what kind of life you want to live. And that, depending on what career you choose, what business you create, it's also going to dictate what lifestyle you have, right? And what I mean by this is, I think I said in the beginning where I kind of knew I never wanted to open a studio myself, right? Like, it was never on my list of goals. And the reason behind that is because I didn't want that lifestyle. To me, like, opening up a studio is like being a restaurant, like opening up a restaurant. Like, I don't want to touch opening up a restaurant, right? Just because that lifestyle of, from what I've known, experienced, and talked to people that are in that industry, I just don't want that for me. Like, it doesn't align with how I envision my work-life balance, but also, you know, how I want to be when I'm older. So I will never focus on, I'm very focused on these businesses. As you'll see, it's like my businesses are allow me to live anywhere. And that's very strategic, because I knew that's the kind of life I want. I didn't want to be tied down to a specific location. So everything I create is flexible to what I want my end kind of work-life vision. So what I'm trying to say is, when you are creating your own thing, keep that in mind. Don't isolate what you want your personal life to look like and your business life, because really they're all combined. And I wouldn't want someone to do is dedicate so much time like creating this business and then 10 years down the line find out they're miserable because they've created a business that doesn't give them the lifestyle that they really want. And then they have to feel like they have to go backwards.
Okay, so this is something that I don't feel is said enough. And I'm just going to repeat it back to you to make sure I've understood. A sense of being self-aware to know where your ambition is beyond just the scope of the mission and the purpose. It's also, how does it fit within the world in which you're carving a space for yourself in, for loved ones, etc. That it's like a big picture as well. You have to think more holistically around where you're driving this to create that kind of balance. Interesting.
Yeah, it's all connected. Okay. I like how you put it, because yeah, it's true. It's, we can be, we're so, you know, career driven, and then often what happens is all of a sudden we wake up 10 years from now and it's like, what happened to my personal or something? Mm-hmm. And yeah, to look at it as a whole, it's not one, and also not to say like you're sacrificing one versus the other. I disagree with that too. It's more you're designing. So this is where my creative life coaching comes in. You're designing your life how you want it, and it includes career. It also includes your personal. And how do you design it in a way that's unique to you, and specifically what's going to foster you? Because success, I mean, you'll see, you'll probably hear from like the most successful business people. Yeah, they've achieved X, Y, and Z in their businesses, but then in hindsight, they're regretting a lot of their maybe other things that they kind of left aside because they're focused on like looking too much in that one direction. So one thing that I like to say to people is, don't ignore like one thing for the other. Always think of it together, because that is how you're, I don't want to say how you survive, but how you are always growing, and you'll be excited to grow and not find yourself burnt out too, right? And motivated. But I liked how you said it. I think you said it more eloquently.
No, I'm really seeing an aspect of this whole concept of the entrepreneur, someone who's got their eye on the prize. Again, I don't feel personally that that's emphasized enough. Thank you for sharing that.
It's true. I mean, most people who are entrepreneurial, like one of their big things is like, oh, I want to work for myself. And then you have to watch out, because if you're not mindful, yeah, you might be working for yourself, but you're actually working 100 times more, and you're like a slave to your own business. Like, it could be a lot harder, right, than that 9 to 5. And honestly, it is a lot of work, right? So you can't be afraid of hard work, but also keep mindful of your own balance, because there's a reason why many people want to be entrepreneurs. It's to kind of create this amazing life for yourself. Mm-hmm. You get too caught up and you stop to actually create that amazing life.
You don't want to end up
where
you were, mm-hmm. but of your own doing.
I mention it because it's not said. It's one of those things that, you know.
You talked about hard work. What do you think are other unsaid hard things that go on?
Yeah, I often get asked a lot because, you know, I've always worked a 9-to-5 and I run all these things on the side, and then a common thing is like, how do you do it? And then I should say I have two young kids.
Oh gosh, can we stop and just say that again? Because since this last 2 years, I believe that there have been a few people recognizing that when someone comes to work, they are not beamed in as, you know, an independent one person island, and then they beam off and just sit waiting to be summoned again for the next day. That mm-hmm. there's lots of other things that go on. And you started, well, I felt that I started to see that in my colleagues and my peers when we were talking, to see kids, to see, you know, them caring, even pets, all kinds of things. And yeah, I just want you to repeat that, because it really is a lot that people are doing without it being said enough.
I'm a parent of two very young kids, and I run the academy, and I'm also, you know, starting this new initiative, and I'm coaching too, right? How's that possible? How's it enough time in the day? And the answer is there's never enough time in the day, right? And the trickiest thing for anyone starting something, especially on the side, especially a busy parent, anything, is time. I used to think time was my enemy, to be honest with you. I was like, if I had one superpower, I always said, I want to freeze time. Because if I could freeze time, then I could get it all. I mean, I still want to be able to freeze time. But the biggest thing that you have to learn if you're going to start your own thing is prioritization. I know that sounds not like exciting, but it's true. It's prioritization, and also knowing you're never going to finish that to-do list. And then also cutting the fat. I mean, as when I say cutting the fat, I mean, that's probably not the best word. Cutting all the things that you don't seem necessary. Like, I don't watch TV that much during the week. On the weekends, I do let myself watch TV, right? But you have to discipline yourself, because if you want it, you have to work. And now when I say work, it doesn't mean it's like this painful process, like, oh my God, I'm always going to be really tired. But you have to create a habit where, you know, for me, it looks like I have my 9-to-5, then I have focus time with my family. And then after my kids go to bed, I have focus on my side business. So I think that's the big thing. I don't want to say multitasking, because I actually dislike multitasking now, because I feel like I don't get anything done. The key thing is focus. So do not try to do multiple things at once. Focus on one thing at a time. And that's how you get. And I like to time block it. Just like I said, my time block focus in the day is at 9-to-5. And I make sure to prioritize my family time, because that's something that could easily get pushed away, right? I'd be like, oh, I don't have time for my kids, or to have dinner. I need to get this email out, or I need to get this project out. But for me, priority number one on my list is family. And trust me, I've had times where I'm like, okay, I can't do that because I need to get X, Y, and Z done. But then I look at, like, if I look 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and if I want my kids to remember, oh, mom had dinner with me every night, you know, mom, I was actually there. That's what I want them to remember. I don't want them to remember, well, mom never had time. She was too busy working. So I have super focused time, family time. And then in the evening is my focused side business time. So set those time slots and then make it a habit. And yes, if you slide one day, that's fine. But don't let that slide for a week or 2 weeks, because then that side business, that initiative that you wanted to do, will never happen. And that's the secret thing between someone that has an idea and takes action and sees it through versus someone that has an idea, but it's like, oh, what happened? That was a year ago. There's been no progress, right? The magic is focus and consistency.
Consistency
is huge.
Yeah.
Like, even if one night you sit there and you get nothing done, just sitting there, that is that's success right there. And that builds that habit. And the same way you time block things, time block and fun stuff too, right? I will say Friday mornings, I get a massage at the end of each month. I have like an outstanding massage on my schedule. It's amazing. I just did it this past year.
Woo!
It's just like things like that, like it's the self-care, right?
That's a little tidbit as well.
I know. Just, yeah, schedule it in. Schedule in self-care just like you would a meeting. And then hold yourself to it. Like for me, I booked it. I know if I miss this meeting of the massage, they're going to charge me money for it. So I'm not going to miss it. But I like pre-booked it. So I couldn't like cancel it on myself. Right. So little tidbits like that. It's all about to get anything done. I think it's focus time and consistency. And that's also, I think if you're a parent out there and you're saying like, I can't do it because I'm too busy, or you're not even a parent, but you just have a really busy life, you know, 10 minutes, start with 10 minutes, start with 20, like it doesn't have to be like 5 hour chunks or even an hour chunk. It could be a 30 minute chunk at night. And if you do that consistently, it builds up, right? So we all have 30 minutes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very true. I love this. This feels very motivational. Thank you for helping to square out some of these areas that feel kind of mystical when it comes to trying to take something up on your own, or even just trying to put something together in order to be joined by others. And did you want to share a bit about then the Academy of Animated Art, the initiative, stuff that we can get our listeners to be a part of, help support, or opportunities for them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Academy of Animated Art is amazing for anyone who wants to get into the industry, who's already in the industry, and specifically for lighting to really help up-level you and talk about focus. I mean, the focus on everything that we put in the courses, and we have professional feedback to all our students on their work. But the focus is we slimmed out everything that you don't need. We just put in exactly what you need to become an amazing lighter, to hone your eye and to get that job and to be successful. So that's the Academy of Animated Art side. As far as this diversity action initiative, I'm really excited about. It's a really good, I guess, case study of my latest idea to reality. And it happened rather quickly, I would say. As part of the Academy, I was invited to speak on a diversity, equity, inclusion panel at SIGGRAPH 2021. And my program is coming out fall of 2022. I'll say how the idea came about is I was invited to be on this diversity panel, and there was a lot of other amazing people on it. It was by Access VFX, and we were sitting there talking about, as a lot of studio heads, and we're talking about diversity in the industry. And for anyone listening, we probably all agree that the industry is not very diverse, right?
Nope.
And we were going kind of around in circles of like, you know, possible ways to make it more diverse and whatnot. And I was sitting there and I had this aha moment where, you know, how can we make the industry more diverse when the applicant pool itself is not diverse, right? And that's where I realized I was in a position, because I had the Academy of Animated Art and this experience, that I can personally make a change here. And after that panel, I sat down, I was talking with Kathleen, who helps run the Access VFX, and I kind of told her my idea. And my idea was, what if I created through the Academy a program that's geared towards the younger generation, like middle school, to introduce them to animation? Because they probably don't know that it even exists as a possibility, as a career, or anything within animation. Introduce them to animation for free and to help guide them and to ultimately create this pipeline for them to be introduced and then foster them all the way through high school to learn all these skills and have access to things that they would never have access to before. So by the end of high school, and this is the kind of the North Star vision, there's a full pipeline fostering a student from middle school all the way through high school, where at the end of high school, they have the skills and portfolio and connections to either one, go to college if they want to, or perhaps go directly into the industry.
That's a really big deal because you are carving out an educational path now.
Mm-hmm.
A way of going from being in school and getting developed skills before you even enter the industry. That's amazing. That's really amazing.
So exactly. And I was like, well, this is how we start from the root, right? It's all about starting from the root.
Exactly.
And that's how we grow the tree, like grow this beautiful flourishing tree of an industry that's diverse. So that was the initial thought process, and how I made that idea come to reality. And this is part of the discussion is I put pen to paper, right? I sat down, I wrote it out. I wrote out my plan of how I visioned it. And then I worked backwards, right? Like, let's say my North Star is this full pipeline where it takes a student from middle school all the way to end of high school. So the biggest thing is I like to work backwards. I like to think of what's my big vision plan for this, which is, you know, this full-fledged pipeline that fosters a child from middle school all the way to end of high school. And then work backwards in that, okay, that's a really daunting plan, right? That takes a lot. And if I were just to look at that and try to get from starting point all the way to the end point, right, you know, in a year, I probably would have that fall flat on my face, right? That's a lot to take on. So what I like to do is, okay, have the big vision and then work backwards. Like, and when I say work backwards, you start from the end goal, and then you say, okay, to get to that goal, what would I need? And then I say, okay, I need so many courses, I need access to hardware, all these things. And I put it all down on paper, but I keep on going back and back and working backwards and like, okay, and where I get to, what's the first step after I do that? So I can see my roadmap. It's essentially, I'm building my roadmap visually. And I will say, as I say that, I expect it to change, because nothing goes perfectly as planned, but there's a lot of value in kind of looking at that big vision and seeing how it will go. And when I do that, then it makes it really clear what the first step is. And in this particular initiative, the first step is that first class, that first intro to animation class that the students are gonna have, the class that's just gonna say, this is the world of animation. These are the possibilities, and get them excited about what they could be doing creatively and get them creating, right? And when I look back, it's also geared towards middle school. So that age group, how can we reach them? And especially at like a not just isolated to, you know, 100, but thousands of students all over the world. And that's where we started. So that's where my initial proposal that I wrote up is for this initial intro to animation course, essentially, that is going to introduce students to the world of animation, the possible careers, and also get them creating and learning animation. So I created this proposal, and I worked with Kathleen to kind of be my reference, or like to kind of go back and forth, and also someone else as well, Anne from the Mill. So it's like kind of like we had this committee already where I wasn't working in isolation, right? I created it, and my co-founder at the time helped as well. And we created it, we had meetings about it, we talked about it. Oh, this is working here. And then we, you know, brainstormed a little, we really crafted it. And when we're ready, then we're like, okay, this sounds amazing. Let's get it into reality. And the next step was we started talking to studios about it and getting support that way. And that looked like a lot of meetings, right? Kind of presentations on my part. And I will say the first one, I was super nervous. And this is kind of the awkward, it relates to like putting yourself out there, feeling that kind of, you know, cringe, awkwardness. But by, you know, the 10th one, I was like, oh, I've got this. This is awesome, right? And it was really fun to do the presentations. So now we fast forward, we were able to get, fast forward, we have 5 and possibly more founding sponsors for the Diversity Action Initiative.
Oh, well done. Congrats.
And the way it works out, it's kind of a collaboration between the Academy and the sponsors, where the Academy, we are creating all the content, you know, all the back end stuff, the training, the animation kits and whatnot. And the sponsors are sponsoring students to go through the program. And it just feels really good, this true collaboration. And it's the first step to increasing diversity in the industry. The sponsors have been great. You know, Framestore, The Mill, Foundry, Ghost VFX, and Zoic, to name a few. And the feedback is really exciting too. People are really excited to have something like this going. And the way I am designing it, and this is where I go back to like, how do you want to design things and whatnot, is I am designing a way where it can be global and it can reach the masses. And that's the same way I designed the Academy, where, you know, we can scale and we can grow this in levels that would be really hard to do with traditional education. So I'm really excited. I'm actually in the middle of developing the whole curriculum now. And yeah, in fall of 2022, we hope to have 100 students go through the beta program.
Wow. So you already have your student class set up and ready to take them through this course.
Yeah. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, I am still in talks with schools, and we're working with schools right now, specifically in the Bronx and New York City, and as part of an after-school program for students.
That's
to go through
amazing.
A 13-week program. Yeah, and it's going to be super fun and engaging. They're going to be mainly doing more kind of like a stop-motion animation, but it's definitely not a stop, like it's not your traditional, like, oh, I'm just going to teach you stop motion. It's definitely going to just give them the first view of all the possibilities of the careers within animation itself, VFX. Like, I'm breaking it down to like, this is a rigger, and like, I'm going to have them meet a rigger that's working in the industry and explain what that person is doing. So they will leave the program with kind of this full spectrum of not only like, oh, you know, most people just think there's one person that does the whole film, right? Like, it's an animator, it does everything. But they'll come out with the knowledge of what really goes into making everything we create, and also inspiring them that, oh, I could be one of those people.
Exactly. And also speaking to this idea of where you don't get that opportunity to try or get a taste of these industries when you come to an age where you're considering entering the industry, some of the blocks are a result of not having any exposure or any experience. So organizations and companies feel that they are fearful of taking on people into industry without having a bit of foundation, without feeling like they can understand that this particular individual will be capable of doing what they hope they need someone to do. So you are helping to eliminate that, because there would have been prior experience, which is another really useful ring to all of these things that create the chain of like trying to make a change in the industry. Well done for cracking that, because that's one of the big ones. That is one of the big ones.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in the roadmap for the North Star vision, you know, it includes mentorship and internships with these studios already at a young age. And yeah, I think it will be beneficial for both, you know, the industry as a whole, but also these individual students. I mean, the future of our industry, it will change their career paths. Hopefully, I'm hoping for the better in these like amazing creative fields that otherwise they would never have known existed, right?
Exactly. It's very rare.
Yeah, and would never have been exposed to it. So I'm quite excited and passionate about it. And yeah, I can't wait to unleash it.
Oh, we really want to. So how do people follow along then, or support, or just keep an eye on things so that they can share the message on? Is there a specific socials to that initiative, or is it just the Academy of Animated Arts socials to follow and see? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, right now it's all going to be within the Academy of Animated Arts. So definitely that's the best place to go. And then that might redirect you to a more, you know, specific area. You can go to the Academy of Animated Art.com page and then go to Diversity Action Program. And that will also lead you to specifically a page that highlights this. If you want to be a sponsor, even if individuals want to sponsor a single student, you know, I see that being a possibility, because it takes a community, it takes all of us, right? So I'm hoping that, and if you're an artist that wants to, you know, volunteer your time to be a mentor, like anything would be really helpful and help change, yeah, the lives of these students and also the growth of our industry. So I think the best way, and if you want to reach me directly, if that was like too much information, you're like, I want to be involved, but I just don't know how, just email me directly. You can email me at jasmine@academyofanimator.com, and then we can have a chat about it.
I will put the links in the show notes, and it feels like we've gone kind of full circle. Another way in which you can do something that's kind of your own making, when you described being a support, being part of this community that helps to grow something else, you can be like a conduit as well. That it may not necessarily be that you are the front-facing person, the person driving it from the back. You could be that sponsor, you could be that mentor that helps an initiative or a project launch. And that's also another way of getting a taste for doing something and saying, right, I'm going to give this a go. It means me taking it upon myself to do X and Y and using the focus and getting to know what these things are so that I can be part of it. And maybe it's also another way to do it that doesn't necessarily take you from 1 to 100 overnight, and maybe you then get inspired to go off and do something else because you've had a go at supporting. I never thought of that. That's
yeah,
a great thing to suggest. So sponsors, mentors, people who can help support, show up and show out for this initiative, because it's a necessary need and we don't have enough of this going on. I think people could be aware of other, you know, ways in which diversity is being improved, but there is certainly a long ways to go. And the more that people can do that, and uniquely in this instance, starting from such a young age, it's game changing. Is there anything else you want to share before we sign off and I let you enjoy the rest of your New York Saturday afternoon?
No, I mean, I love this conversation and I completely agree, especially with that last aha moment of, yeah, starting small, like just volunteering to be a mentor or a sponsor. Sorry, my daughter just walked in.
That's all good.
Okay, can you go to dad? Okay, I'll be out in 1 second, okay?
Oh, this is real life. This is real life.
Yeah, so that's my daughter that just walked in the room. If you try to go too big all at once, usually you might get, you know, you might hit obstacles that may daunt you from like even trying again, right? It's all about what's a turtle? Slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah, the turtle and the hare, yeah.
It's really that, right? Slow and steady wins the race. So like you said, start small, start anywhere, and then you'll surprise yourself. You'll start gaining like all like another thought might come up as you're doing it. And just the same way as I didn't have this diversity action initiative in my mind, you know, over a year ago, but it was due to a conversation I started having. I was like, ooh, you know, just put yourself out there, say yes to things too, meet new people. I think that's huge. Like just different perspectives will really help open your mind up to all these possibilities you might not have realized either. I love it. Totally
inspired and feeling like there is a lot of useful learnings and lessons that our listeners can gain from this conversation. Let's not lie, there's a lot on the agenda around side hustles, there's a lot on the agenda around doing things that you start on your own, and it's great to see and hear from people who genuinely are doing it and have their really sort of frank discussions around what they're doing, why they do it, the things that account to them.
Thank you for having me.